for report and possible discussion and actuarial valuation report from Gallagher Benefit Services, Inc. by John Hollis.
Again, Madam Chair, I'm going to introduce Doug Anderson. Doug is with Gallagher Benefit. He is our actuary. And of course, once a year, they provide the actuarial report that they have now done, and this is their report. I have hard copies. You all have it up there, but I also have hard copies of his presentation, so I'll pass this out if you would like to either refer to it on the screen or can utilize that. And I also have hard copies of his entire report, which you also have electronically, but if you'd like a copy of that, we can kind of do it.
Thank you. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, yes. I work right up Interstate 35, but I'm 20 miles up in Minneapolis. It's the second year we've done our report. It was really relatively smooth here this year. A year ago, when we took over the work, we worked through some participant data issues, kind of reclassified some employees, fixed a few amounts from prior actuaries' data, kind of worked through those issues this year. This year, relatively smooth reporting process. So in this summary here, it really captures, I think, pretty much everything that's in the valuation report, kind of the key points. So if we just look at it, we have some information on the participant data. Again, cleaned up a few things last year. Not a lot of changes this year. It's a closed group, so no news coming into the plan. And so the total count of participants is dropping just a little bit, from 370 a year ago to 367. The reason it would drop is because of deaths of participants in the plan. So a few of those this year. Otherwise, it's mostly reclassifying. You have active employees that terminate, so they move from the active group to the terminated vested group. And then you may have actives that also retire, or terminated vested employees that also retire. So just some shifting within the group, but not a lot of dramatic changes in this past year. I think you can see the bottom of this page. There we go. This is just the active employees in this group. Again, it's a closed group, so there's not a lot of new participants being reflected or new employees being reflected in the age groups at the younger ages. But you can see a large bubble, and this is what you hear about a lot. We see this with plan after plan, where a lot of the participants are nearing retirement. And we do capture and anticipate all these future retirements in our calculations. So we make assumptions about how active participation changes, rates of turnover, rates of retirement, rates of mortality after retirement. So we do anticipate that there's going to be a lot of retirements coming. We build that into the liability.
Do you have any idea how much that increases our monthly expense?
I do, yes. And at the very end of this presentation,
okay.
And based on all those assumptions that we do, and we do this on an individual basis, so every participant in the plan, we value a separate liability for them, and we really are making predictions about what will happen to each participant, or apply our assumptions to each participant. And so here you can see a little bit about how the different groups are going to change over an extended period of time. We would expect the active employees in this plan continue to decline as they reach retirement age. The group of retirees will decline in the future as well due to deaths. And so you can kind of see that this plan, even while it's closed, it still has a fairly long life. At some point in the future, it may make sense to terminate the plan, which means really turning over the administration and the responsibilities of the plan to an insurance company. The cost to do that now, very substantial. It's not a fully funded plan, and usually costs a lot because you're transferring the investment risk, the mortality risk, and all the administration to an insurer or someone else who would want to take that. So it costs a lot at the moment, but usually that's what you would see happen in a plan like this. wouldn't necessarily want to administer a plan all the way out to the last participant. On the following page is a summary of the asset changes of the last two plan years. Plan year ending February 28, 2009, now there's a plan year for the fund. Last plan year was the plan year. But you'll see the beginning value back in March of 2008 compared to the ending value in March 1st of 2010, still a pretty significant drop. Even though looking at those two rates of return for the year, -22.6% offset by 22.8%. Together, that would look like you're averaging zero return. The issue is that when you have a negative return followed by a positive return, it's not going to turn out as favorable. And then you have benefit payments coming out of the plan as well. And what we're trying to do here really is there's an assumption that you're going to get a 7.5% return. So really in the first plan year we're showing here, a -22.6% return means you're 30.1% short of your 7.5% assumption. And then the following year, the 22.8% return, which is a great year, it's probably the only year we can say this in relative terms, it's only 15.3% above the assumption. So, and we see this with plan after plan after plan, it's one good year, it isn't enough to offset the tough year that happened.
I understand that. However, our return 10-year and 5-year is significantly below the 7.5, as I see it in our reports. Is there a point where you stop and say, well, maybe 7.5 isn't realistic? Where is that number? When do you do that?
I think that's a great question. You know, that's not for me to answer, not being an investment.
You could get fired, you know.
It's our job is to reflect the investment assumption in the liability calculations.
Your recommendation on the 280 to fund the 280,000, is that pretty much line up exactly with the ERISA? If we were ERISA required to fund, would that be pretty much the requirement?
ERISA they mandate the interest rate you can use. And they have given more flexibility in recent years, whether to use a long-term curve or corporate bond rates. But those tend to be, currently, for our clients, those tend to be around 6.5% for a discount rate, which, if that were applied, it would increase the liability estimate by probably 10 to 15%.
So what you're saying, 6.5% seems to be a reasonable assumption by most plans y'all audit?
6.5% is it's reasonable in terms of mandated by the IRS.
Okay.
The IRS says you have to use some rates in that range. So that's for the ERISA plans.
Right.
In the public sector, what we see is that most plans still use 8%. About half the plans out there use 8%. The fund I'm meeting with this afternoon uses 8.5. They're getting challenged more than they used to.
How close are they?
Not very close. So the range that we see in public sector is usually 7.5 to 8.5. With most at 8%. Now that's based on a lot of surveys that are always a year late coming out, and just some of the what I hear anecdotally is that where 8% used to be the norm, no one's raising their rates with that one.
Yeah,
I think it's likely that people are looking at more.
That rate that we do have in the plan, is that a contractually obligation of the company?
It's discretionary.
Yeah, the committee established, actually a long time back, I suspect they established a 7.5% target rate. And as Doug said, that's pretty consistent in the public sector. You heard the private sector's
lower.
Or ERISA, at least, the Fed had a little bit lower than that. But between 7 and 8, almost between 7 and 9% is the range that you'll probably see in the public sector of the targets that they had. And clearly, this last decade has, it's been a flat decade, the whole 10 years, man. It's been so nobody has made anywhere near that rate for this period of time.
Doug, you've got $144,000 in expenses. What makes that up?
I don't know specifically each piece here, but what can make it up is the investment fees, the trustee, the actuary, the audit, everyone you're hearing speak today.
Oh, he's got it. It's mine.
Well, the reason I ask that is looking at the numbers, if you really extend it, it looks like a couple $100,000, and that's the reason I'm trying to figure out what the difference is. And to say, I'm sure it's the components that have been used, but I'm just curious. I've got you stumped. That's okay. We'll take it.
Yeah.
I mean, if I can answer, if you're talking about the actual number of approximately $150,000, $140,000, about 90 to 100 of it is the BlackRock Merrill Lynch portion. And then there is a trust fee.
Right.
There's the trustee fee.
Right.
And then, as Doug said, the actuarial fee and then the audit fee. So that pretty much, those four elements are pretty much what bring you to that number when you had all those up. So.
And our investment return assumption is that the fund will earn 7.5% after those expenses are paid. And so we use that assumption to match up the liability of the plan with the assets. So rather than really project the assets out, what we do is we estimate all those benefit payments for each participant, and we discount those back to today's date or the valuation date using the 7.5% as a discounting rate. And then we have a series of other assumptions, as I mentioned, of retirement, termination. We did, in last year's valuation, we made two changes to the asset value. One was to incorporate a smoothing approach, and that's very common in the public sector. It's rare that I see one that doesn't use that. But it's there to take out some of the volatility of the contributions from year to year. And those that weren't using it a year ago started using it a year ago to help defer some of the recognition of some of the losses from the 2008-2009 plan year. The other recommendation we made was to change the cost method, something that's a little bit more commonly used, particularly with closed plans. In fact, the method we chose is now the Government Accounting Standards Board is talking about mandating the use of this method going forward. So the method that was used before probably isn't going to be allowed anyway going forward, but we changed that a year ago. And so the approach on the following page is we put a single dollar value as of the valuation date on the promised benefits. It's called the present value benefits. So those are all fully earned by the participants, $23.6 million. Just as a note here, really, is that we aren't attributing any to any future earnings of the benefits. So that's more a note of how the benefit, the method changed a year ago. So it's all considered earned benefits by the participants. And then we compare that to the actuarial value of assets, which is the smooth value. So it's a little bit higher because it still hasn't recognized all the big losses from 2 years ago, nor has it fully recognized some of the gains from the past year. And we see the difference between those is $2.7 million. That's the amount to be funded. So if you wanted to fully fund this plan, you put in $2.7 million and you're 100% funded.
If we earn 7.5%.
That's right, you continue.
Yeah. So if you put that in, you're 100% funded, and then if you earn the assumption, you would have enough money to pay out all the benefits as they become due. On the other hand, if you wanted to terminate the plan, the liability to go to pay that out is going to be higher than that 23.6 million, to get someone to take it off your hands. So 2.7 is the unfunded if you're going to earn 7.5% going forward and keep the plan.
And Doug, the reason, the reason for that, you all are another reason why we keep hires, because insurance companies stuff are not going to guarantee a 7.5%. They're not going to take it on and accept a 7.5%. They're going to, and that's why it would be a, this would be a horrific time to try to do that right now, because rates are as low as they are. You would, you couldn't begin to, well, you could, but it would not be very smart to do that. At some point in the future, it might.
That's a reason why, one of the reasons why, with public sector, you see they use higher rates, 7.5 to 8.5, because it's an assumption that the plan will continue indefinitely. There's security there. That's why those assumptions are still allowed to be used. With private employers, there's not, the IRS doesn't have that level of trust that any single employer will be around a year from now. So they want you to value the liability closer to what it would cost to unload the plan on the insurance company. So we take, put an annual cost on this. We spread that unfunded liability over, a year ago it was over a 30-year amortization period. Now that's down to a 29-year amortization period. So if you contribute to $214,823 consistently, 29 years, and all other assumptions are met, you would reach 45. The following slide shows just a comparison of the same process a year ago versus.
Got a question. On your plan participant chart, you're going to show we're going to have 18 years. We're going to have 30 people that will still be working for the company. Well, approximately 119 that will be receiving benefits from this plan. Correct?
Correct.
And we'll be funding $214,000 for another 10 years after that if we don't do some catch-up funding.
Correct. Our problem is we've got an excessive cash flow for the next 10 years or so, it looks like to me, with the number of employees, and then that demand drops off, but we're going to absorb a lot of principal in the next 3 or 4 years unless we got a lot of money and meeting our assumptions. That, am I correct?
Yes, correct.
Is the 214 assuming that over that next 18 years that our average return is 7.5%?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's what you just said. I have to say it twice.
Get the checkbook out.
Well, in saying that, you guys are the experts, but from my perspective, I think we're unfunded, and we're going to continue to be unfunded, and that 214 is a probability. I mean, nobody can guess what the market's done, but that's why we have a 5-year average. That's why we have a 10-year average. And we're doing all these things to it to make it look or be as least cost on us going forward, when I think we've got to have the courage to step up and say, we need to fund this thing, because it could get a lot worse. I mean, we could be promising 7.5 to our staff, and we're going to have to keep funding to make that 7.5. And the compounding effect of that funding requirement is not going to become less. Every year you come back, it's going to keep growing if we don't make our yields, correct?
The assumptions are met.
That 214 is going to go to 220, 260, 280, whatever the case. This plan is going to be shrinking, and I'd hate to be here someday when we've got 5-10 people on staff and we're funding $500,000 a year, and we still have those others that are retired out there. But really, in my opinion, that would be kind of poor management on our part. But again, I just don't know when we've got to step up and say, we're not going to make 7.5, guys and gals. We're just not going to do it. It's been 10 years, 5 years, three. Recent years, great. But you got to look at the last two, zero. We're behind 15% in the last 2 years. Our performance is not kept up with the reality here. And I guess what I'm saying as a committee member is I think we should fund it in a greater portion now so that we don't have the burden so much more later. And I'm not saying necessarily 2.7 million, but I am saying we need to recognize it and manage it. And pushing it out, pushing it forward, is, to my, in my opinion, not very good stewardship in light of the fact that we've been so negative over the last 10, 5, and 2 years. Now, I'm not saying necessarily we lower the rate, but if we're not going to lower the rate, then I think we need to fund more of the liability. Because this number is the number I've been looking for since on this committee, the 2.7 million. We're unfunded by 2.7 million.
I think that's something that we can discuss thoroughly, maybe at a future, put it on as an agenda item.
Yes,
absolutely. Because I know we review that plan that sort of controls that 7.5%, biannually? Or?
Yes, the investment policy is where it's established. We reestablished sort of a new investment policy.
Right.
The idea was to set up an asset allocation that would achieve 7.5. Clearly, as we've all said, this last decade had. Now, if you go back decades before, 7.5% was achieved.
Yes.
Back in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, to some extent, overall.
Okay, so I think if we can move on, then we will have that as an agenda item in the future.
Okay, on this page, we just have a history of the recommended contributions. I think it's a practice to make these contributions each year. The big drop in 2008 was when the plan was frozen. So usually there's two pieces to the contribution requirement. One is to contribute for the benefits earned by active employees that year. And that dropped to zero in 2008. And then the other piece is to contribute to pay off the unfunded liability. Well, in 2008, there wasn't an unfunded liability. And then by March of 2009, there is, and that's what the contributions here, you know, this is for the plan year ending February 28th. So the 2010 number there is really for the 2009-2010 plan year. So that's when the new unfunded came in. And then this shows a projection of the bars there is the liabilities in the plan, 23.6 million right now. It's expected to stay fairly level. Now this is based on that assumption. So as long as that assumption is being used, the 7.5, the liability will be close to this number. It will vary because of any significant changes in participants, things that happen different than what we expect. But liabilities, they grow with interest and they decrease when you make the payments that year. So it's expected to be pretty steady. The market value, that orange line, here we're showing it, assuming it earns 7.5%. In reality, that's gonna, who knows what that will do. But if it earns 7.5%, it grows with that interest, also decreases with benefit payments. So what these two lines show, I think, is that the cash flow in the plan is, the expected earnings is close to the expected benefit payments coming up. This also factors in the expected contributions, if expected contributions are made. And then here's where you can see the use of that actuarial value of assets, that right now it's an inflated value because it hasn't recognized all those losses from 2 years ago. And so as those are fully recognized, that'll move closer to the market value. And actually in 2013, you see the actuarial value less than the market value. At that point, you've recognized all the losses from the 2008-2009 year, but you have one more year to recognize the gains from this past year. And then if that all makes sense, then the two should equal thereafter.
Your market value line includes contributions made by the BRA to the plan.
Yeah, we assume the recommended contributions made. And then the final slide is just showing the expected benefit payments to come out of the plan each year in the next 5 years. And here's where you can start to see that the increases that are expected when you have a larger number of retirees or people approaching retirement age. And so the cash flow of the plan is going to increase. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.